pyramid has opened and a new issue of GQ Style is upon us. This is episode 37 of Corporate Lunch. No, we have a special guest here, do we not?
A very special guest here.
Familiar to us, new to you Corporate Lunch listeners, ladies and gentlemen, is GQ and GQ Style Executive Design Director, Rob Vargas.
Hello.
Hey, Rob.
And the crowd goes wild.
I'm fairly new to you guys, too.
We've I was going to say,
all
pretty
of 5 months.
Pretty
You're
new.
5 months deep here at the Content Tower?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Rob is the man, and we're gonna tell you more of why he's here, but yesterday we dropped the fall issue of GQ Style, Tyler, the Creator cover.
Holy shit.
Noah, how do you feel about it?
Crazy.
I feel crazy? Energized. Like, it's just making you feel a little bit insane?
We only do a few of these a year. This is very special, extreme height of what we do here in the Tower.
It's
we're making content all day long, every day, but rarely do we get to drop a new issue of GQ Style.
And there's been a drought because we did not do a summer issue.
We went quiet for a moment.
The drought is over. So we shot Tyler, the Creator, and a little bit of the backstory on that is... I don't know about you guys, but I think Tyler, the Creator, seems to have come out of the womb as some sort of creative visionary.
Yeah, 100%.
The guy, I don't know how old he was when Odd Future first broke, but 19 or something?
Yeah, young. They were all young.
And I remember the first time I encountered them, there was a complete 360 world that he had built.
Yeah.
And, brought us Earl Sweatshirt, brought us an artist by the name of Frank Ocean.
Yowzers.
And just brought us all sorts of jackass level hip hop hijinks.
Definitely.
And by jackass, I mean italicized as in Johnny Knoxville.
And it came along with an entire aesthetic world, a whole sort of universe of culture and language and an outlook.
Like post Pharrell skateboard, Nego, Bape, all of that fully consumed and left behind. And
digital native.
Brought into a new teen zone.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just hold Tyler in super high regard. And so we got really collaborative with him. And Mobilaji Dawadu, intrepid GQ Style fashion director, and I got on a call with Tyler and we just talked about, if we're going to do this cover, what it would look like. And Tyler was like, yeah, you guys know about some photographers, but I want to work with this guy who shoots buildings. And I was like, oh, shit. Where's this going? But then he brought up this photographer named Mathieu Vinot, who lives in Brest, France. That's B-R-E-S-T, France. And is basically an architectural photographer who goes on adventures around Europe and just walks around by himself and shoots balconies, stairways, the corners of buildings. And so we signed up to collaborate with this guy. He'd never really done a portrait. He never shot really a In any professional capacity, never shot a person before.
Right.
Full stop. And Tyler was like, shoot me like you shoot your buildings.
But just to
Tyler was basically ignore what the tall dude is saying, whispering in your ear. Listen to me, that being me. Listen to me, that being Tyler. Shoot me like you shoot your buildings.
Just to give people who don't work in the business some understanding here of how kind of rare and unusual that would be. Both that Tyler came with the photographer suggestion and we went with it, but also that the cover photographer isn't considered a master portrait taker of some sort.
In fact, has never even taken a portrait. Yeah. Not only is he not a master, he's just never done this before. So it was an awesome adventure, man, and I think we're all really proud of the results. It is a very different looking cover for us, for sure, and I suspect that when I get to see it on a newsstand very soon, among the other magazines, it's going to look different from everything else out there, and
definitely.
I'm super proud of that. It's kind of if you're going to call Tyler, that's what you want, is something really different.
Yeah.
But that's not all. That's not all the change we had in store for this issue of GQ Style. No, Rob is here because he's the man and because there's a new logo, GQ Style, and Rob and his team have entirely redesigned the magazine. And since GQ Style is a magazine about many things, including fashion, art, architecture, and design, we thought we would just get into it a little bit. For starters, Rob, you said you've been here at GQ and GQ Style for 5 months. Can you tell us a little bit about your career before this?
Sure. Right before this, I was a creative director at Bloomberg Businessweek, so it was just a natural fit.
That's our main competition.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Hate those guys.
Yeah. It's like hedge funders, Tyler the creator. Yeah. Yes, perfect match. But Bloomberg was an interesting place because despite the sort of the dryness of some of the content, we were kind of known for experimental design.
Definitely.
And, big time.
Yeah, and it was a great place to push boundaries and experiment and fail often and also succeed sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of success. And there were sort of, it's up to you how deep into this you want to get, but there were sort of two eras of your tenure there, design-wise, right?
Yep.
And photographically, for that matter.
Yep.
I mean, there was an era that was really aggressively and outwardly experimental.
Yeah.
I'm gonna float this and then you respond however you want, including correcting me. And then there was an era that was a little bit more dialed back, a little bit less fireworks in terms of experimentation, but no less considered and intelligent and, for my money, beautifully designed. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, it is fair. There was a short period, actually, when we first, when the magazine first relaunched, when Mike Bloomberg bought the magazine in 2010, the first iteration of the redesign was actually closer to where it is now, which is a sort of a little more organized and slightly more user-friendly, cleaner version, which is specifically geared towards, I think, specifically a finance audience.
Right.
I think, shortly after we did the relaunch, we experienced a great amount of freedom, which you don't normally have. And Bloomberg wasn't a publishing company.
Right.
And so they gave us a lot of a lot of space to kind of play around. And, they weren't worried about necessarily a lot of revenue at the time.
Yeah.
and so it's amazing what you can do when that's the case.
You guys were letting it rip, man.
Yeah. And so there was a middle period that, the founding creative director of the redesign, Richard Turley, is sort of like, that's sort of what he sort of established, that kind of wild look of experimentation.
Yeah.
And then when he left,
how would you describe it? It was like hard flash photography, big type treatments.
Yeah.
It was just really aggressive and in your face.
Yeah.
And not concerned with being pretty.
Yeah. We actually very purposefully try to be ugly.
Yes. You must understand what's happening in sneakers right now.
Were there some that you remember, like some famously ugly ones that stick out to
what
you?
What was the most
ugliest?
Yeah. What was the most hideously proud cover you were involved in?
Actually, I remember.
Just awful looking, but awesome.
There was one special issue we did where I was an art director at the time, and the mandate from Richard was find all the ugliest fonts you can find.
Yes, dude.
And also, we're going to use no photography.
Are you talking wingdings or what?
Oh, like
Comic Sans?
Like sort of Comic Sans B-sides.
Yeah. Comic
sketches.
Yeah, exactly.
I also like the idea of like, find all the ugliest fonts you can find and we're going to bet the farm on them.
Yeah.
No pictures either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was super strange. And then
did you win an ASME for that cover or something?
Oh no, the ASMEs didn't like us at all.
Really?
No, yeah. but those of us who do this shit for a living loved it.
Yeah.
Cuz it was like them boys is wild. Yeah, and girls, they wild.
Yeah. And so that was definitely fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, they're like, well, maybe we should make a little bit of money off of this magazine.
And maybe we should consider a reader.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And so as you put it, we were sort of designing for a certain crowd.
Yeah.
And that tension between the kind of purposefully amateurish design and the sort of very serious and well-reported journalism was interesting. But then when we wanted to sort of like get back to our core like finance audience, then we kind of went, I guess in essence, we went back to our roots a little bit.
Yep.
And just made it sort of like cleaner information design.
And did you feel in that later era where it was a little bit more clean and a little bit more like, still so elevated, but still a little bit more like, what you might expect from like the most glorious version of a business publication, basically. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like hemmed in at all, or was it just like a different type of freedom?
To be honest, the after having experienced the level of freedom that we had, which was unprecedented, I think, in magazines, and it's like, I don't know, when you're in those situations, it's like, it's easy to like kind of take credit for stuff. But yeah, it's like, yeah. It's really like, I think that, you know, one's potential is only as far reaching as, you know, your corporate masters allow you.
Yeah, totally.
And so
what?
Tell me about it.
And so getting a taste of that was like really special and like really addictive in a way.
Yeah.
And so there was definitely a feeling of being a little hemmed in, but you know, at the same time, we were allowed to dictate the way the new look manifested.
Right.
You know, that we, you know, as you know, Bloomberg is primarily a finance company, and so our corporate masters weren't necessarily the most visual people. And yeah. so, you know, that they had certain needs that they expressed that we addressed the way we felt was right. But there wasn't, you know, any of that micromanaging, like, right. Oh, can you use that typeface?
Can you move this over here?
Yeah, exactly. So, overall it was a positive experience.
Yeah.
But that middle period was definitely a very special time.
Yeah. One thing that I think was so energizing about it is it came at a time that we're still in, that's been ongoing, of just like mass digital visual information being a huge part of our lives. So print magazines have to address a lot of, they got a lot of questions to answer kind of suddenly. So Bloomberg doing this in while this whole sort of narrative about the future of print and what it means and what it should do unfolding was like especially exciting, I thought.
Yeah.
Were you guys thinking a lot about that at the time? Was it like, was part of it kind of just like, well, here we've got this print thing that's totally unique in its physical form and kind of like what it can do design wise. Let's push that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in that way, it links a lot to, I guess, the thinking that we were talking about with GQ Style, and that, you know, it's crazy. I mean, I think it's crazy that it's 2018 and we're making magazines.
Totally.
Yeah. It is.
It's kind of what gets me out of bed in the morning. I'm like, I still get to go do this.
Yeah.
Two of them.
Yeah.
This is insane.
Yeah. And so, which I mean, to me, you just have to ask yourself, like, you know, and not in a negative way, but like, what is the point of this thing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
no, I mean, now it's no longer just because ad money is falling from the sky.
Right.
That's why we make it, or because this title has this incredible legacy. It's like, we really have to be providing something that you can't get anywhere else, or right. really nobody's going to care, and they're going to stop printing it.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, not to like overplay up design, because that's obviously where I'm coming from, but, you know, but you can have a good reading experience online. You know,
yeah.
You can even... Yeah. In certain cases, you know, experience a photograph in a meaningful way online.
Definitely.
I think in terms of the way websites are laid out, like that, you know, you don't experience the same level of freedom in how you design those things as you do in print.
Right.
And to me, that is like still a huge differentiation into how you experience content.
Yep.
And so in order to, I think, kind of justify the existence of print, you really have to think about how you take that beautiful photography, how you take those words, and how you combine them in a way that are non-reproducible
right.
in another place. I think both in other
and that elevates
and
all of them.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly true, because we're all, you know, spend plenty of time, I'm sure, on Instagram, and that, I mean, it is one of the beauties of Instagram is it's so flat in terms of, we're all working with the same
yeah.
format.
Yeah.
For every picture.
It's uniform.
So you get a couple choices, yeah. you know, and they've been adding more, and they've added video and all that. But at the same time, like, everybody has to go through the same like format mulcher, or whatever the best way to put it is. So in a way, that's exciting, because it's such a level playing field when you see somebody doing something especially interesting with the format, when they don't have anything at their disposal that you don't have.
Right.
That's really exciting. But on the other hand, it is part of what I think is keeping print vital, is just like our ability to be a little more wild and free.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think everyone has like a good sense of like even what individual websites, what that templating is like.
Yeah.
You know, big horizontal. I mean, still a lot of websites struggle with publishing vertical photos.
Totally.
Like this is a thing still. Also another crazy thing that we're just
trying to do. Well, not only, you got to be optimized for all the right things just in the architecture of your site in terms of recirculation and just getting enough content in front of people's eyeballs, but a weird website would just confuse people and they'll leave.
Yeah.
But a weird magazine can just draw you in.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like something arresting or unusual or even a little confusing in print can be good.
Yeah.
Whereas online, it could you just give up. You just move on. Like, well, I don't get it. Next thing, give me the next thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Your point about vertical photos on websites being tricky for some sites is especially funny because now we mostly surf the web on our incredibly vertical iPhones.
Yeah, 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 totally.
But then, like, video is usually formatted horizontally.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, you can, like, rotoscope. Is that what you call it when you turn your iPhone? You can, like, turn your iPhone and shit and it'll flip.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's still, it's like, as simple as it is, as, like, as dialed as the platforms are, it's also, like, confused mess.
Yeah.
It's like websites are kind of oriented horizontally. Videos are oriented horizontally. We're all looking at them on, like, phones that are way more vertical than any magazine or anything we're used to experiencing, and it's chaos out there. It's chaos.
There are brilliant minds in coding and design out there that has still
still scratching
like vertical or horizontal.
Yeah, ultimately, it comes down to something that simple that dictates like how a huge whole industry is sort of built. Yeah.
And put a horizontal photo on Instagram and watch your likes not stack up. You know what I mean? It's just like it's you get half the likes when you put a horizontal up there.
Yeah.
So before you came to GQ and GQ Style, what were your and you can be honest.
Yeah.
God knows this is corporate lunch. You can be honest.
It's safe space.
It is a tree of cone of safety. What were your impressions specifically? You know, more about GQ Style and maybe the way it relates to GQ or what it was doing differently or not so differently
in the
marketplace.
I mean, you know, I did get a sense that it was, you know, it had a more niche audience.
Yep.
And in a way that was a bit more liberating because, you know, as we all know, the more mass something has to be, the safer it has to be in certain ways.
Yep.
And so I noticed in GQ Style, you know, you guys were taking risks with the fashion. You guys were introducing subjects that weren't necessarily known to all the masses, but they were doing things interesting creatively or in sports or in, you know, in a lot of different realms. And so I saw it as you know, very much related to GQ insofar as that it was smart and it was thoughtful, but... it sort of pushed, you know, the risk taking a bit more, which I found really appealing.
Right. Let's talk a little bit first, because I think, I'm curious, like for a reader, their first encounter. So Rob and his team have, as I said, new logo and complete redesign, which we're introducing with the Tyler, the Creator fall issue. Did the logo come from the redesign of what's inside the magazine or did it go the other way? Was it kind of logo first and that set the tone?
It was a little bit the other way. Because you know, if you remember, we were looking at, I did an initial mock-up and it was, well, people will have seen it by now.
Yeah. Go for it. You can say whatever you want.
Okay. Well, you know, the big innovation with the logo.
This is now a TED.
Press some buttons, Sam. Pull some triggers.
Drum roll effect.
Yeah. Oh, no. We got all lasers.
This is a TED talk now.
Yeah. The logo is stacked vertically.
I think let's just let that sink in.
Yeah. So initially, you know, I mean, part of what led the initial sketches for the cover is that, you know, I thought the photos were so great. And I think part of what made a lot of those images so interesting is that, you know, you guys weren't, you know, and particularly some of the ones on the inside, and I think the Oscar Isaac cover, but, you know, there was just so much going on. Like, they were so lush, you know, there were environments, backgrounds, colors, and, you know, I think the traditional idea of a magazine is that you shoot a person from the waist up on white and then you have the right and the left hand side for like a bunch of cover lines.
Right.
And so I think especially like in our initial conversations going into the Tyler shoot, we kind of knew that we were in for something different.
Yep.
And we kind of knew that we didn't want to have like all this type all over the image. And so the initial version, I stacked the logo vertically on the left hand side. And then had a strip at the bottom with the cover lines. And then on the upper right, it was just basically the photo, like, uninterrupted.
Right. So the logo and the words fall 2018 and some cover lines were all part of one boxed-in unit.
Yeah.
All together.
Yeah.
In the initial version.
Yeah. And then I remember you saw it, and then you were into the overall aesthetic, but your feedback was, well, maybe we should just keep the photo. I mean, also the dimensions of the magazine are great because it's larger than a normal magazine, and the paper stock is also better.
Yeah, and a little more square.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so your feedback was, I think we should take advantage of like keeping the photos full bleed. And I was like, that's a really great point. And so basically took the verticality of the logo and just like condensed it into one little tight unit on the upper right hand side. So it still kind of functions like a basic logo in that it's like sitting on the photo.
Yep.
But it's sitting on it in a way that like, you know, a lot of logos sort of go all the way across the top.
Right.
And this one sort of like it's very bold. It uses like these thick rules, but it kind of sits in this little corner. So you can definitely, you can't miss it, but you can run photos that are very busy and that have like a lot going on without, you know, interrupting them too much.
Right. And, you know, I mean, maybe people know this, maybe they don't. One reason that the logos always start, I mean, I guess some magazines, the logos are centered across the middle, the top of the magazine, but usually the logos start at the top left corner of the magazine because the way magazines are traditionally stacked on newsstands, if you end up not in the front row, you can be back left, and basically all that can be showing of your publication is the top left corner.
Yeah.
So in a way, we just sort of like fully committed to that space and gave everything else to the picture.
Yeah.
So it was logo first, and then we also completely rethought the first section of the magazine, which is called What to Wear Now. That's where we really get into basically our Mondo edit of all the best clothes of the season, right?
Yeah, basically really, I think, sets the tone. It's product, but it also really establishes sort of a point of view and a style, and it's you know, for some people, probably really the meat and potatoes of the whole thing. It's just like, show me the stuff.
I mean, that's the way I always thought
and
of it.
And we kill it in this department. No one,
like we show you
seriously,
stuff.
Seriously, no one touches us with this section. And they haven't before, and it's only better now thanks to Rob and his team. But like, it's honestly the best in class, and it's not even close.
I can't sit here and argue with you. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe Sam disagrees, but he doesn't have a microphone. Yeah, I mean, I've always thought of What to Wear Now as the, like, this is where it kind of starts for us and for our readers, which is, like, let's get into some garms.
Yeah.
Let's look at some fashions. Let's see all the best, most beautiful stuff of the season. And part of it is, like, you know, it's all, one thing we've never been scared of, it is a lot of it is really expensive high fashion.
Yeah, it's designer clothes.
My perspective on that has always been, like, I want to see you're making a beautiful print magazine on incredible paper stock with the best photographers in the world.
Yeah.
Show me the most beautiful stuff in the world. I can either afford it or I can't, you know, but I don't really care. That's what I want to look at.
And it is a different experience. Like, you're not just going to click and buy that thing. So you don't get, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the frustration related to price and like accessibility in certain ways it's totally different. And I agree. I think it's about seeing what's out there and seeing the best of what's out there. And then there's the gems in between, you know. It's not all elite European fashion houses.
No, it's definitely not, and it's not all expensive. Yeah. But we didn't worry about price.
And we also don't worry about like, well, I don't. It comes up, but it's some things are more experimental. Some things are a little strange. You know, like, it's not all based on like a trend that's very easy that we're like endorsing. It's just based on stuff we think is really dope. And you know, we see everything that's out there pretty much. I can confidently say that. So
I'm glad you said the T word.
Yeah.
Because in the fall, starting with the fall issue of GQ Style, we've completely banned the notion of trends.
We eliminated it.
Yeah.
Trends have been eliminated.
I think, you know, generally magazine fashion editorial is organized by trends, and we felt like nobody thinks that way anymore. And if you want to see if you want to know about, like, let's say you're in the market for a leather shirt. If you're in the market for a leather shirt and you come to GQ Style, we're going to show you the best one.
Yeah.
The one you should buy. The only one you should buy. So it's not like, oh, you're into leather shirts? We're going to show you five and you can choose your own adventure.
Right.
It's like, no, we're going to show you the best one. And so we got rid of the whole thing, like organized, like grouping things together by style of garment. And we're just like, let's show, where did we end up? It's like the 27 best fashion pieces and the 13 best head to toe looks for the nice round number of 40. But I would say that was a pretty, well, I was thinking of it when I first talked to you about wanting to make these changes, like, this is going to be a pretty significant design challenge, because we're talking about 30 pages that basically, like, have no way to be organized, because the whole the whole point is to not organize them according to trends or anything else. So it's just like, Rob, we're going to give you just a big old group of product, and we're going to give you a big old group of fashion shot on people, and you got to figure it out. You got to make it work over 30 pages.
Yeah, I mean, that was super fun. I mean, it was one of the hardest things to do in the magazine, but it was, and I mean, in being hard, it was super fun to figure out.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, also, like, you know, the way you shot the items, they had this movement to them,
right?
Which we had discussed, because we didn't want it to be like these static laydowns. You know, obviously, the thing we wanted to get away from is, you know, the danger with laydowns and products is that getting into the catalog territory.
Yeah, and just, I think, looking like some shitty e-com site.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and I think the way, you know, the way the items are styled in the shoot and the way they're laid out, like, definitely, I think both serve to kind of celebrate them being, like you said, the best of their categories.
Yeah. And Dr. Mobolaji Dawadu deserves some credit too, because, I mean, a lot of the input comes from Sam and Noah, but Mobolaji has a pretty sweet eye for pattern and color.
Oh, it's amazing.
And stuff that really bangs. And Rob and I were talking the other day, they were like, there's so much orange.
Yeah.
We're not organizing things by trends, but if you look through those 30 pages of what to wear now, there's a shitload of orange.
Yeah, that's funny.
So if you just can't get away from thinking about trends, the one trend we have to offer you is orange.
What you can do is you can take your scissors and you can cut out each individual item and create little trends of your own.
You don't need Rob's design.
Reorganize.
Rob, let's just fully, I think we just need to do this needs to be the font section of Corporate Lunch.
Great.
The font segment. I mean, I know the deal, but tell me the deal with the GQ style font.
It's just
singular.
It's one font.
There's just one font.
There's just one font.
And for everything, so that's logo, cover lines, the big type through the magazine, the actual, like, you know, Noah has an incredible piece on Hyder Ackerman, so his actual, like, 2,500 words of text, it's just one font.
Well, to be fair, I mean, it's a true statement.
Yeah.
But it's also it's true with a modification.
Okay, let's go.
In that it's one font, but the font has 85 styles.
Wow. And what are the kinds of variations that appear in different styles of that one font? And are we naming the font?
It's GT America.
GT America.
GT stands for Grilly Type, which is a really good type foundry that I think GQ has worked with in the past.
Agreed. I think that's true.
Yeah.
Shout out to GT America, our only font.
Friends of the pod.
We are going to die using that font. No, but tell me a little bit about the thinking of that, because that, while, like, you know, readers who don't love fonts might never notice that, it's in its way super radical.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 85 styles. I mean, well, we did a ton of research, I think, because we're also concurrently thinking of, you know, some of the changes we wanted to make in GQ. And so we wanted to, you know, pick things that serve, like, a dual purpose. And so this font, it has styles that feel sort of very, you know, legible at, like, small text sizes. It has styles that feel very kind of like classic American editorial design. It has styles that feel sort of like chunkier and like a little more European. So it just gave us like a lot of flexibility. And so I think that particularly with GQ style, we embraced kind of the chunkier, bigger, bolder fonts.
Yep.
Because, you know, I think, and I don't know if you can really differentiate. I think you can sort of, like, European from American fashion sensibilities.
Definitely.
And
for sure.
And I would say that style is I think between GQ style and GQ is definitely GQ style leans more European, in terms of, you know, in terms of how radical it is in certain ways.
Right.
And so we kind of embrace that aesthetic. And so all the fonts are very bold, and it's a very, very clean template. Like, there aren't little doodads and details that you find in a lot of magazines. So we kind of, like, eliminated anything that felt superfluous and just kept it, you know, the cleanest version of what it could be. And then we really leaned into the moments where we can actually implement some design, which is on a lot of the openers.
Yeah. like the, I mean, to use the Heider Ackerman, well, everybody should just check out the new issue of GQ Style.
It's crazy. How many, a typical magazine has like a whole bunch of fonts in their font bag, just to be clear, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for the most part. I mean,
and then we'll introduce new ones like in an issue, in a, just for an issue or just for one story or.
Yeah, it's actually the like when my team and I first arrived, you know, we were looking through all the G, and this is nerd and like super nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
But like we were looking through the GQ font servers, mm-hmm. which is like the servers where they keep all the typefaces they used. 2,500.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're down to one. That seems good.
Yeah.
That seems like yeah. a.
No, I just got a text from accounting, and they were like, your font budget is gets the thumbs up. Nothing else you do gets yeah. a thumbs up, but the font budget definitely gets a thumbs up.
Yeah. Thanks for that. We're all getting huge bonuses this year, I hear.
Yeah, font bonuses.
We're getting a font bonus.
Sam, let's order some actual lunch.
We could finally cater this thing.
I don't think we need to like run down all the stories in the issue, but I think, you know, we had an awesome time, Rob, working with you and your team on this like new energy for GQ Style. I mean, it's like the same magazine and also not. And that's what excited me about it. And it was, you know, I think also in part like a continuation of the energy that we had from this conversation with Tyler, the Creator, where it was like, we're off. I mean, I feel like we do really different stuff with almost every cover story and every issue. But this one felt different because we were just being collaborative in a new way. And then that, like, I mean, that's not why we did a redesign, but as we were, it was like, let's rethink what to wear now. We've got this very different kind of cover story, and maybe this is an opportunity to change the logo, and on and on and on it went. So yeah, everybody go check it out. And if you see it and you think, I don't need this, I've got a cell phone, maybe we're not for you.
I can't wait to see it on
maybe you stands. Can go dig a ditch.
It's always really exciting when a new issue comes out to see it out there in the world on yeah. a, like, yeah. you know, especially if someone's reading it or if on someone's coffee table. But on the newsstand is always really fun because it's like by comparison, you really get to see like what's the vibe of the newsstand this month and where do we sit within that. This one's going to be amazing to see on the yeah. newsstand. The new logo, the colors yeah. on the cover image are amazing. I mean, Tyler looks cool as hell. To me, he's like top three in the style.
Damn.
Right now. He's killing it. His style's just been amazing. It comes with the whole maturity thing. It came up earlier, but this notion of he's kind of a different Tyler these days.
Definitely.
And it shines. It's amazing. So good.
We're going to say something about the newsstand?
No, I was going to say I was looking forward to seeing it at Whole Foods.
Yeah, totally.
That's always
the
great.
Whole Foods line.
The
well,
Whole Foods
seeing,
checkout line.
Seeing your own magazine on the newsstand is as close as you can get to just like seeing it like somebody else does, seeing it through somebody
yeah.
else's eyes.
Because yeah.
there's all the noise of like what everybody else is doing, and yeah. you're like, are we standing out? Or, like, we thought we were doing something radical. Are we really? Like, does it pop? Does it not? Is it lost? Is it too bright? Is it too dark? Is it too covered and covered lines? Or is it just right? Are we yeah. geniuses? Oh, yes, we. We're geniuses.
We're geniuses.
Let's get into some vibes.
Let's
Rob,
go.
Thank you so much, dude.
Thanks for coming
yeah,
around.
No, thank you.
Pleasure
guys.
Working with you.
Same.
It's holiday issue time now.
Oh, back yeah. to work.
Yeah.
We got to do it again.
We've been back to work. We were back to work before we even finished the other work.
It's true.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
All right, thank you.
13. Here we go. It's vibes time. The not so fast lightning round of shit Will and I like right now here today in the corporate lunch content tower podcast studio.
No, kick us off, please. Please do something for us here.
I'm going to go straight to the hype. It's the hype flavor of the week. It is the all white, white on white, Nike Presto, off-white, Virgil Abloh new drop.
So good.
I'm into it. I'm going to try to get a pair.
Me too.
I'm entering these raffles.
Me
I didn't
too,
the black
dude.
The first drop didn't like
I don't know
fully
about entering raffles, but I'm
Sam's
trying to
been
get
entering
a pair.
You into all the
okay,
raffles.
Cool.
There was John
Sam's
Mayer.
Sam's like, no, I haven't.
John Mayer, friend of the pod, John Mayer, obviously got a pair and had the online ceramics dudes custom dye them for him. Did you see that?
They, yeah, they
got
dude. A talk bit about of friends
a,
of the pod.
A faded rainbow kind of vibe to it. Been getting that sent my way. So these
permanent shout out Online Ceramics. Yeah, those are the forever.
Homies. The homies. Anyway, this is not a revelatory one. It's this shoe's been blowing up the feeds. I just want to go on record with a big fat cosign on this shoe.
You should go ahead and go on record with your shoe size too. You never know what influencer might be listening.
Size 10. Then we're at the Content Tower. That's One World Trade Center. New York.
One Content Tower place. I'm a 14. Everyone out there. No, dude, I'm right behind you. I'm trying to see a pair of those. My first vibe is Toby and Wigway. He's got this song called Dope. That Erykah Badu posted on her Instagram. Oh, what sick. Happened is this dude, I guess he lives in Texas where Miss Erykah lives. And Dave Chappelle texted Erykah and he's like, yo, this dude's incredible. You're gonna dig his music. He lives down by you. You gotta check him out. And so Erykah checked out his music and DM'd him and told him that he's dope. And then he freaked out and recorded himself and his wife and this guy who sings with him and his wife, like, reacting to the DM. And then Dave Chappelle called him. They FaceTimed. And Dave Chappelle told him he's dope too. And then he made this song called Dope. And it's like, Miss Badu told me I'm dope. And he's got this thing. He's like, standing on the water and I'm just like Michael Phelps. It's amazing. And he wears a Stone Cold Steve Austin t-shirt. And
what's his name?
Toby and Wigway. NWIGWE.
This is a heartwarming story, and I can't wait to hear the song.
Song is so good.
This is news to me.
I wake up in the morning and I listen to that song, and then I like can start my day. I think about how I get to make a print magazine, then I start my day.
All right.
Two print magazines.
Now I know how I'm starting my days. The next vibe is Winnie the Pooh.
Please tell me you're serious.
Famous. Yeah, I'm serious. Let's
stop everything for a second. I love you, dude. I love you so much. That's an insane vibe. Winnie the Pooh.
So, but there's more. I've always had it. Everyone loves Winnie the Pooh. I especially loved Winnie the Pooh. When I was about 13, my grandfather gave me a book called The Tao of Pooh. Do you know this book?
Yeah.
It's a very famous book that kind of introduces the Eastern philosophy of Taoism through Winnie the Pooh. But tomorrow or this week or next week, there's a movie called Christopher Robin coming out. It's like a live action Winnie the Pooh movie.
Live action?
Yeah, it's like, yes, not. I don't know if there's humans in it. It's like Fantastic Mr. Fox or something. It's like puppets.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But there might be real humans. Yeah. I didn't actually watch the trailer. A writer by the name of Corbin Goebel wrote a piece for GQ.com. Just recently about whether or not Winnie the Pooh should wear pants. And I was just downright outraged. A lot of people apparently think he should put pants on.
They're like, yeah, man, that's a great kid's character, but he needs to get some pants.
Anyway, the vibe is Winnie the Pooh. Also, if you ever see somebody wearing just a shirt with no pants, that's called pooing.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you're doing the Winnie the Pooh.
Doing the Winnie the Pooh. One of the great vibes, I kind of feel like giving up. But I will proceed. I'm going to gather myself and proceed.
All right.
My vibe is the jewelry brand, the Great Frog London.
Oh, dope.
The Great Frog made my gold bracelet. Mm-hmm. Basically what happened is I was on a plane to England to do a GQ photo shoot with the photographer Alistair McClellan. Alistair had told me about this British movie from the 1960s. That we were going to use as, like, you know, one of the light touchstones for the shoot. And so I was watching it on the plane, and the main character in the movie just had this, like, really tasteful gold bracelet on.
Yeah.
And so I guess I was on a plane to Paris and then going to London from Paris. And I was out with some friends, and this dude like pulled up to our table. We had shared mutual friends. And I was like, what's up? I'm Will. And he was like, I'm Reno. And I was like, are you Reno from the Great Frog? And he's like, because we have other mutual friends.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, yeah, I'm Reno from the Great Frog. And I was like, look, man, I'm doing this shoot in 2 days in London. And here is a screenshot I took of the character with this gold bracelet. Can you make us this gold bracelet in like 30 hours? And he was like, I can try, man. And I was like, awesome.
This just happened tableside at the restaurant?
At a bar, yeah.
Yeah, at a bar.
Yeah, sitting at a bar. And I'm like, do you think you could do this? Like, it was Friday. And I was like, no, it was Thursday. And I was like, for a Saturday morning shoot. And then he texted me and he was like, this dude with tattoos on a motorcycle named like like killer or assassin or spider or some shit is going to show up. He's on the way with the bracelet.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I bought the bracelet, kept it.
Yeah.
And the Great Frog of London, great jewelry.
It's a dope bracelet. I've been admiring it. It's kind of a big link, clean, but not big, but.
I thought to vibe it because my friend who was in town last night, who lives in Nashville, freaks out because she wants my bracelet or wants to buy her husband my bracelet or whatever.
The Great Frog. Now you too can.
Great Frog.
Get one. All right, the next vibe, I finally got my hands on one of my favorite releases in recent memory. It's the Missoni Times La Rose bucket hat.
Such a good bucket hat. Maybe the bucket hat to have. I saw it sitting on your desk the other day, yeah. And I was like, I can't really wear a bucket hat, but I was like, damn, that's bucket hat.
It's a bright multicolored plaid that is similar, if not the same fabric as like the jumpsuit that, for instance, Diddy wore in his GQ cover shoot.
Yep.
Or that Mobilizzi Dawodu wears sometimes if you see him around in the Missoni jumpsuit.
Like on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
But it's similar to that plaid. It's really dope. Isaac LaRose is the homie, friend of the pod.
Shout out, Ike.
Canadian hat maker, party thrower. He's done some, it's a very low key collab. Missoni doesn't, you know, like they don't do big marketing or whatever. You don't see too many out there. It was actually pretty hard to get my hands on, but I just landed one and it's like everything I hope
score,
it will be.
Score of a lifetime.
It's massive.
Summer score of a lifetime.
So get your hunt on. Good luck.
Dude, I'm going with Ken Burns Vietnam.
Oh yeah.
I'm deep right now in the Ken Burns Vietnam series and, I'm just down with Ken Burns. I know that some people are not. They make fun of him for the effect where he pans around still photos. I don't care, dude.
There's not a ton of video footage out there from all of history.
Not always video, but sometimes there's pictures and you got to make a move. Just kind of panning around. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like video.
No, but I'm super into Ken Burns and the Vietnam. Well, the Vietnam War is just fascinating and it's a really interesting time for this, you know, documentary series, because in a way the Vietnam War was like the end of American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
And that's not like breaking news, that like it's not Ken Burns isn't out to like make that declaration, but it's just very clear. And through watching this documentary, you're able to like really get into the mechanics of it. And I knew like the Vietnam War was like, I mean, if it's known as anything, it's known as one of the great like clusters of all time.
Right.
And we all know that about it. But to really get in there and to understand how deep, how thorny of a cluster that war was.
Yeah.
And how we got into it and how complicated it was. Like, I just never fully knew. And, you know, history class didn't really break it open for me.
No.
So I'm just like, I would love to go home right now and just crush another episode.
My last vibe is something I'm going to call by a name that I just made up, which is just describes exactly what it is. Summer vacation boredom.
Talk to me.
Just like embracing the idea of like boredom can be hard to come by these days. Like we sometimes think we get bored, but we don't really. I feel like this is a topic we kind of, you and I return to. This is very central to the corporate lunch ethos in some ways, but we don't allow for enough boredom in our lives really. And sometimes what we think is boredom is actually just like, withdrawal or something from like digital stimulation.
Yep.
But, I'm taking off next week with the family for some time away and, you know, be somewhat unplugged. But one of my objectives for the whole trip is just like, go somewhere beautiful and get really bored.
Just like mind-numbing, face-melting boredom.
Yeah, and I'm going to like work on it, work to achieve it. Like reduce the itinerary down. You know, I mean, we'll eat and we'll go places, we'll walk. But
maybe sometimes you won't.
I'm going to get bored. I can't wait.
That sounds really good. And yeah. It begs the question, what's the difference between boredom and relaxation?
I don't really know.
Maybe it's the way you react. Maybe it's the way you feel about that feeling.
Yeah.
Like you can choose to feel bored or you can choose relaxation.
You know, like exactly. Like I can find moments of relaxation like all the time. Even like right now.
Yeah.
During this podcast.
Wow, man. Something just descended when you said that.
Yeah.
Wow. Boredom's- I don't even know if I want to keep talking. I just want to. Kind
you
of
just find it.
Just kind of backstroke in this feeling
right.
of boredom.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to round it out with one last vibe, and it's a two-beat vibe.
Okay.
The vibe is Sam Hine Productions.
Mm-hmm.
beat number two is Samhain Productions' new haircut.
Yeah.
Dude, this haircut has just been crushing minds in the office.
I know.
Were you a part of the little sortie that created this haircut?
First of all,
are you about to take credit for this haircut?
We both got our haircut at the same time at the same place, and no one has mentioned my haircut, and people won't shut up.
Have you seen Sam Hines' haircut?
All I know is we went into this really dope place called Vacancy Projects in the East Village, and we had a nice time in there. And I was talking to my stylist while he was talking to his stylist, and all I heard Sam Hines say was cheekbones.
He was like, cool, I got it from here.
That was the directive.
Sam, you're the man.
It looks good. I'll take a picture of it and post it soon.
You're gonna post the Samhain Productions portrait mode?
Maybe after this ep comes out, I'll post the haircut.
Oh,
on my
no ground. A picture of Samhain Productions and his new haircut needs to be the like SoundCloud background.
That's the cover of this,
100%. 100%.
Sorry, Sam.
I think Vacancy Projects posted it.
Did they post you on their Instagram? They were like, oh, he's a Ryan McGinley model.
What? The other good thing about Sam is you're like, Sam, we're going to make you the face of the SoundCloud this week. He's like, yeah, whatever. That's cool.
He can't really do shit about it anyway. Actually, he can. He uploads.
I was going to say, do you know how to set that back?
I don't have the keys to that. No,
this is episode 37 of Corporate Lunch. Shout out Rob Vargas. Shout out Samhain Productions.
New issue.
Shout out Noah Johnson. Go cop the new issue of GQ Style. It's fire. I would not lie to you.
Fall 2018.
Don't listen to episode 38 if you haven't copped the fall issue of GQ Style. This is let's do a deal, man. Let's do a deal. All right. Most these sheep move like clones. That's why I be on my own. My mama thought I was a joke, but Miss Badu told me I'm dope. Yeah, I'm dope. Yeah, I'm dope. Miss Badu told me I'm, and I know it. You can't admit nothing else. That's why every beat I'm on is water, and I'm Michael Phelps. Told my partner, get your bread up, but that don't equal well. But you can't help all your partners unless you done help yourself. So I need more than kudos and a high five. From PRX.